You're listening to Gillespie Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com. And welcome to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. It is another wonderful Tuesday this evening. With me is my co-host, my good luck charm, so to speak, as she's become, the Smoozy Q.
Oh,
hi.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm coming off a long, relaxing, fun weekend and trying to get back into the swing of things.
That's right. It was your birthday, so let's all get together and give a little happy birthday shout out to the Smoozy Q.
Thank you.
You're welcome. As it is our custom on this show, we tend to record things early. As many people probably don't know, we tend to actually record the bookends of the show last.
Right.
And so earlier this evening when we were talking with our future guest, Miss, the wonderful Miss Dina Fraioli, you were actually chilling out, relaxing all cool, to quote the theme song to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, except not at a basketball court. You were at a pool.
I was at a pool. I was at my home away from home in the summer.
Yes, and you took time out from your time at the pool, away from your Bud Light Lime and your hamburger.
I wasn't actually away from them, but...
and in true Smoozy...
They were right there with me.
And in true Smoozy fashion, I'm guessing that was a bunless hamburger?
No. I actually was having that one on a bun. I mean, it's just, you know, when you're at the pool, you put it on the grill. The easiest way to eat it at that point is on a bun.
That's right. Well, it is...
Who needs silverware when you're on the pool deck?
Exactly. Thank you. All right. Well, a big happy birthday to the Smoozy Q.
Aw, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, as probably most of our listeners, if they are regular... they probably noticed last week it was a bit of a rerun.
Yes. It was a good rerun.
It was. Solid rerun. But thanks to the folks over at FTR, they decided to let the previous week's show run one more week because I was in Tampa attending and participating in the Republican National Convention. This was an experience like I have never had. It's actually sort of rekindled the fire in me.
I'll bet. I'm so jealous of you. I was so jealous of you all week. I can't even begin to tell you how much I was jealous of you.
I saw the one tweet saying you were jealous of me. And I'm sorry I didn't respond because I was busy.
yeah, well, I know where I rank.
No, actually, I had an experience probably unlike most people who have attended or even worked the GOP convention, in that I was part of the digital comms team. And this is the first convention that Republicans have gone pretty much straight to the internet to give you unfettered coverage of the convention. And by that, I mean we were streaming the entire convention live on YouTube. We had an active Twitter feed. We were constantly updating our Facebook pages. We were in if they're friends with me on Facebook, they can see this. So I should probably also put this to my public page if people aren't friends with me, which you can find at facebook.com/TheJoshGillespie. Shameless plug. Anyway, we were housed at the Google Digital Center or the Google Media Center, depending on who you talk to. And it was this – it was practically like a stage. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it was a stage. And it was Google's – They were a sponsor of the RNC convention, which kind of boggles the mind if you're a conservative, because you tend to think of Google as, well, liberal, because we always have our conspiracy theories that they're pushing down Republican stuff. Anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But Google was a sponsor of the Republican National Convention. They had this huge setup, and they had if people – do you have a G+ account, Smoozy?
Oh, I do, yes.
I think most people do. They just don't realize it.
I just don't use it very often, but and I forget about it often, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. That's the problem. That's the problem. And Google was actually taking tremendous steps to kind of bypass that, because in a sense that was kind of the underlying joke, because they were having Google Hangouts. And mm-hmm. if you're not familiar with a Google Hangout, it's essentially like having a Skype conversation where you use a video chat.
Got it.
But you're bringing in people from all over the country. You can see one another, and you can make these things private or public.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had this big Google Hangout stage area. I mean, it was essentially like what you would see a normal newscast set. Mm-hmm. And then behind it, they had like a glass wall, like you're watching the Today Show, and you know, you see the people on the street.
Right.
They had that going on behind them, so you'd see people, you know, running, going to and from, walking past. There was a free coffee station that was supplied by the local coffee company. It was really good.
That.
Oh, it was fantastic because it was free. the only problem is that they only served from 9 to 7, and I got into work routinely at 6:30.
I did see you tweeting Brutal. About being there far too early for the free coffee.
Oh my goodness! Well, we had to work shifts, so I was working my shift. It was brutal, just absolutely brutal to be there that early, but it was totally worth it. Aside from the lack of coffee and the fact that the free breakfast for staffers did not open until seven, I think. Yeah, so the mornings were rough. I am not a morning person.
Me neither.
Yeah. So anyway, I was there. But anyway, so they had different like bubbles or cubes or whatever the heck they're hovels, if you want to. I don't really know what they're called. But different stations set up in the Google Hangout, plus one over in the Tampa Bay Times Forum, where all the action was taking place, for people to participate in these hangouts. And so we had, you know, elected officials that we would get to participate in these hangouts, and they would interview, well, not interview, but they would have these discussions with targeted voters in particular states. Now, these were open to the public, but it was like, you know, Karl Rove meets with the people from Colorado, which I think was actually supposed to take place, but I'm not sure if it actually did. And you had to be flexible, which was a little difficult, but you had to be flexible because there was so much going on that sometimes people couldn't make it. One of those instances was where Connie Mack, who was running for Senate in Florida, canceled on us 4 minutes before his hangout was supposed to start.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, lo and behold, Susan Molinari, former congresswoman from the great state of New York, who is now a VP for Google, was walking around. So we grab her, and they start having a Google hangout with Susan Molinari. Well, in the middle of Susan Molinari's hangout, John Voight shows up. and mind you, we didn't even know he was there. But he shows up, and he crashes the hangout. And so, you know, people are gathering around, and everyone's taking pictures. I took some pictures, you know, because it's like, well, that's John Voight. And of course, anytime I think of John Voight, people who are older than me, they may think of Deliverance. Which that's a joke in and of itself. I think of Seinfeld and the episode where George Costanza purchases John Voight's car. Well, at least who he thinks is John Voight's car. Well, the joke is that it's John, and John Voight spells his name John. And then of course, you know, Jerry happens to find a pencil in John Voight's car that was bitten on. And so the whole thing is, you know, John Voight actually makes an appearance in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And this he actually ends up biting the character Kramer's arm.
Oh.
And so they compare the bite marks on Kramer's arm to the bite marks in the pencil. Anyway, long story to that. Anyway, so John Voight shows up. He actually is in the convention the whole time. Chairman Reince Priebus came by our little section, you know, the digital comms team. We had our own little area, that people kept on sticking their heads in because, I mean, you're walking around this Google Digital Media Center like it's an exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would pop their heads into our area thinking that, you know, oh, hey, this is just part of the place and people are in here just crashing, you know, working on their computers and whatnot. No, we're a team. And so people would kind of stare at us like we were animals at a zoo.
At the zoo. I was just picturing that.
And
did anyone feed you?
Well, that's what I wanted to say to some of these people. I was like, please don't feed the animals. But and then sometimes they would just kind of hang out and then start watching. We had five TVs plus this giant screen. And so people would just kind of hang out and be like, what are you doing here? We're actually working. So it was a little odd, but at the same time, it kind of kept the levity up, you know, mm-hmm. and none of us really kind of got off nerve. We were all happy. We were all doing our thing. I mean, there were stressful times, especially for the people who are running the Google Hangouts. It was different. Whereas you go into the other parts of the convention center, where the rest of the staffers were, and they were in these kind of dull gray windowless rooms, people just crammed into this place, and they're all, you know, the energy levels are up high, the tension level is up high because you don't want to screw anything up. And here we are in our blue room, you know, people are coming in and out, it's a lively atmosphere, and it was just completely different than, you know, within probably what other people were experiencing. And so, yeah, you saw Chairman Priebus came by, Eric Cantor came by, Mike Lee came by, Senator from Utah. Other people were stopping by. And lo and behold, one day, Chelsea Clinton, of all people, was standing outside our little area getting interviewed for something, probably for ABC, because I think she does something for ABC. Mm-hmm. But she was there to do a forum on youth voters. And so I was like, well, I'm going to take this opportunity because it's not every day you come across a Clinton. And I got my picture taken with Chelsea Clinton.
I saw that picture.
I was kind of jazzed about that. I know she's a Democrat and all, but
you
I
were
mean,
starstruck.
In a sense, I was. I was like, you know, as a child of the 90s, you kind of grew up with her.
Sure. Oh, so. Child of the 90s.
Don't mean to make you feel bad.
Don't
there,
remind
Smizzy.
Me.
Well, okay, I've talked enough because we have a great show tonight, and I haven't even mm-hmm. really even touched on everything that I got to experience. Maybe we'll get into that even the following week. But tonight we have from Breitbart, the editor-in-chief, Larry O'Connor is here. He will be on talking about his experience at the RNC and what he kind of sees going forward. And then we talk with, as I mentioned before, the wonderful, the adorable Miss Dina Fraioli. She'll be on coming up a little bit later in the show as well. So, stick around with the Smoozy Q and me. We have a jam-packed show. So, Susie, are you excited for this?
I can't wait.
All right. Coming up next, we didn't even talk about the Nicki Minaj stuff. Dang it, I meant to. That'll be referenced later in the show. I'm not editing it out because it's late at night. but everyone knows what we're talking about here. So, stick around for that. We'll be back right after this. You are listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back. Something moving,
feeling new. President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans. And to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
Welcome back to Gillespie here on FDRradio.com. With me, as always, is the Smoozy Q. How you doing, Susie?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. We have a very special guest this segment. We have the editor-in-chief at Breitbart TV and a radio talk show host of the Larry, known as the Larry O'Connor Show, probably about as creative as Gillespie. We have on Larry O'Connor. Larry, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. Larry, we wanted to have you on this week, obviously, because you were running double, triple, quadruple duty at the GOP convention, doing talk shows for radio shows for numerous stations, including one from my hometown of Indianapolis.
Yeah.
In addition to your Breitbart work, and now you're headed to Charlotte. Are you getting a chance to rest at all?
Yeah, we're pretty tired. Although this weekend, you know, Demon Sheep, I know you all know Demon Sheep from Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And
Meredith Jake, of course, the associate editor over at Breitbart, the three of us just decompressed for a couple of days in Orlando. A lot of people went straight up to Charlotte, but we took a couple of days off to go to Disney World, slept most of the time. And now, as you're speaking to us, we're actually on the road. I'm exploding the myth here. This is a pre-recorded interview. Am I supposed to do that? Is that okay?
That is absolutely fine.
So we're heading up to Charlotte right now, and we're a little rested, but you're right. We were wearing a lot of hats. I got to fill in for some talk show hosts. I did a lot of guest spots. A lot of talk show hosts had me on as a guest for various things to kind of talk about how Breitbart was covering the event. We did a lot of exclusive interviews just specifically for Breitbart. Plus, you know, we have a site to maintain. So whenever we weren't doing our live interviews, we were just, you know, pumping out videos and getting them up at Breitbart for the readers to see. In fact, I should tell you, in the 3 days of the convention combined, I believe we produced over, 128 different individual videos.
Wow.
That were up and available for people, including most of the full speeches from the top people at the convention. So we're pretty proud. This is our first time covering a convention. As you know, Big Hollywood, which was the first big blog that Andrew Breitbart created, it launched just before the inauguration of President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
We had never covered a convention before, so this is our debut, and we're pretty proud of how we were able to move the narrative on a couple of very key issues last week down in Tampa.
We're talking with Larry O'Connor, editor-in-chief over at Breitbart. Larry, what were your general impressions of the convention?
I was happy. You know, this is the fun thing because I'm a very biased journalist. I'm covering it, but everybody knows where I stand.
Oh, sure.
I want this ticket to win, and I was there as a Republican as well as a journalist. And as a Republican, I was pretty happy with how it came off. They ran a very tight ship, I thought, a little too tight, frankly. The security was a little out of control at times, but I guess if you're going to go overboard on something, security is a good thing to go overboard on.
Yes.
I was impressed that they didn't try to out Obama Obama. They didn't try to make this a show, a big, full-on stagecraft, a glitzy Hollywood-produced show. They put on a convention which had a very clear message, which was, we are a party of ideas. We are a party of solutions. We recognize the problems. We are being honest with the American people that we have serious problems, and it's going to take some hard work and some sacrifice to fix them. It's not as easy as just class warfare and taxing the rich. There's actually some fundamental structural problems in our country and in our federal budget that need to be addressed. That was a message that was so clear, and belief in America and the free market system. That was definitely the theme of the last night, and I was impressed with that. I was impressed that they didn't try to pander. Romney Ryan, they are who they are, and Romney is a boring white guy who is a very competent, successful businessman,
mm-hmm.
and Ryan is a very electrifying legislator who has come up with a pretty dynamic budget to fix our entitlement programs once and for all. And that's what you saw. And I like the fact that they didn't try to be cult of personality. They didn't try to suggest that Romney was the greatest and most eloquent speaker. They didn't try to offer a Republican version of Obama. Instead, it was a very clear and very direct attack on the problems that we have and on the president and his party's lack of ability to address those problems over the 4 years they had in the White House.
Well, I think also you saw how the GOP from convention in 2008 to now has sort of grown up. I mean, we all know of the gridlock that happens in Washington and just kind of the Washington speak. But what I think we saw here, I mean, just with the amount of diversity, which NBC and MSNBC like to deny, but we saw the amount of diversity in this group, and there was more looking forward with this group than looking back.
Yeah, no, I've looked at the lineup now that the Democrats have laid out for Charlotte, I've looked at what the themes are going to be, and you're so right, Josh. It really is. It's funny what a difference 4 years makes, because the Republican convention was very much about looking forward and a party of new and fresh and original ideas. And you look at the highlights that we're going to see from the Democratic convention are speeches from Bill Clinton, Joe Biden, and Bob Kerry. John Kerry.
John
Bob
Kerry.
Kerry is even worse. it's ridiculous. It's really, I mean, Stephanie Cutter has said, she's the deputy campaign manager for Barack Obama, and she said that the theme of Bill Clinton's speech was, "I did it, and Obama's doing it." It's kind of sad, actually, because this was supposed to be, they're supposed to be the party of the future of the young people. And you also mentioned diversity. Diversity is more than just who you put up on the podium. It's who's down on the delegate floor. And one of my favorite moments that really went unnoticed this last week was when Marco Rubio was giving his speech, and he is such a charismatic and engaging political figure based on his biography, but also his ability to really represent everything that the Tea Party was all about and pushing against the Republican establishment with Charlie Crist, grabbing that nomination and taking Florida into a brand new Republican decade, I think. When he was doing his speech, he started saying some things in Spanish. And you know how Latino politicians do this sometimes. They'll say something in Spanish and then immediately translate in English. Well, when he said his statement in Spanish, probably about a quarter of the crowd in the arena all started applauding because they already knew what he said. Mm-hmm. They were either Spanish-speaking people or they were, Caucasians who knew Spanish. I realized at that moment, wow, this isn't just about, a handful of people who are Latino politicians. We've got a heck of a lot of delegates here who are in touch with the Latino voter. And I thought that was a pretty cool moment, actually.
It is, Larry. That's it's encouraging to see that and kind of following up on what you were saying.
Claro, muy bien. Muy excitante para Smoothie Q and la podcast de la FDR.
Don't translate that.
Okay, so now, just so you know, for your Spanish-speaking listeners, I have just made this an X-rated podcast.
Oh, fantastic.
I love it. you were mentioning like the comparing the lineups of the speakers, and when I looked at the list of what's coming up this week, all I could think of is, where's the Democratic bench? I mean, who do they have? Who are their rising stars? Because I don't see any that strikes me.
You are so right, and I that's actually one of my. We're going to be on Radio Row, and we're hoping. I mean, Democratic politicians hopefully are. They're working the row. Hopefully, they'll sit down and talk to us. If they don't sit down and talk to us, that will be content as well. We'll interview an empty chair. I'll have plenty into it.
The big
but,
hit.
One of my questions is, I don't know how to phrase it, so I'll say something like, we all know Barack Obama is going to win, but just in case he doesn't, who do you see as the leaders emerging in 2016? Because the fact of the matter is, Smoothie Q, this man should not be in the White House because this was not his time. This was Hillary Clinton's time. Mm-hmm. He sort of jump-started things here. And when he got the nomination, when he chose Joe Biden, he really kind of screwed the Democratic Party because, Joe Biden is not a legitimate 2016 successor to this president. Mm-hmm. And Hillary Clinton's probably going to be too old. And here's the other thing. If Obama loses, there's going to be a movement within the party to say, dude, we went way too far to the left. We've got to get back to that Bill Clinton, Joe Lieberman, Democrat Leadership Council kind of, moderate, we can talk to middle America. We're not just about the coastal major cities. If I were a Democrat, and I want the Democratic Party to be thriving, I really do. I think that our country is better off when we've got a thriving political discussion between two very strong parties with some very, passionate, patriotic politicians from both sides. If they were smart, they would start looking at people like Evan Bayh from Indiana, who retired out of the Senate because he thought that Barack Obama had taken the party too far to the left. Archer Davis, the Democrat that we had at the Republican convention speaking out on behalf of Romney because Obama had gone too far to the left, those are the kind of politicians they've got to try to get back. But I doubt they will. I think that they're too beholden to the labor unions and to the extremes within their party.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, for all the talk by the liberals to say that the Republicans are now kowtowing to the Tea Party, I mean, the liberals, the Democratic Party, they've gone to the extreme left, and it's going to be hard for them to swing back towards the center. I mean, the Blue Dogs, they are dwindling in number. I mean, it just seems as if they, you guys are right, they have no bench outside of Hillary.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing about that is, first of all, the media will never make a point of that, because you used a really, really funny phrase that you don't hear very often, Josh. You heard, too far to the left.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, is that even possible? Can you be too far to the left?
Well,
certainly CNN would never accuse the party of being too far to the left.
Absolutely.
And that's the problem. You know, they don't, you know, I think one of the things that has helped the Republican Party become we just had a poll this weekend, I think it was a Rasmussen poll, that said for the highest percentage of American voters identify themselves as Republicans right now since September of 2004. That's a huge swing for voters now to identify themselves with the Republican Party. And I think one of the things that helped us, frankly, is that the media does sort of call out the party every time some of the more strident voices on the right are heard, and it's forced the Republican leadership to temper their rhetoric in certain cases. And I know that that's frustrating to conservatives, mm-hmm. but frankly, it has helped us find our message and make us a much more appealing I'm sorry, I'm handing pizza to Meredith right now, and it's getting all over the place. All right, Meredith, you got it? You're going to get into an accident, aren't you? But there's no voice to temper the left. There mm-hmm. are no voices in the media to call out the left on their extremism, because as far as the media is concerned, they're not extreme. Mm-hmm. And it's actually starting to sting them, I think.
Well, now tell me this. You know, I had the question.
Okay, I'm wearing a white T-shirt and green shorts, and I've got running shoes on right now. But later on, I'm gonna put some Converse on. Yeah,
fantastic.
I just completely forgot what I was going to say. Oh yeah,
I'm so disturbed that I answered you on that, Josh, and not Susie. Yeah, thanks a lot for that.
Well, okay. You talk about the kind of the appeal. And the one thing that really kind of stuck out at this convention, which had, you know, Republicans and Democrats, the media elite, the Republican establishment talking, was the Clint Eastwood speech.
Yeah.
And
greatest convention speech in the history of American politics.
I was working behind the scenes of the convention the whole time, working with the Committee on Arrangements doing digital comms. And that night, the final night, was the first time that I made it into the Tampa Bay Times Forum for everything, you know, because I wanted to see Romney's speech, I wanted to see Rubio, and I wanted to see Eastwood.
So you're the reason why I couldn't get a seat.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. And, you know, we had this Gigapan. I don't know if you've heard of them. They do those really wide shots where, you know, you can really high megapixels, so you can drill down and you can actually tag yourself on Facebook in a giant photo. I was so far up, the picture actually doesn't even catch me.
Yeah, I guarantee you I was further up than you were, because I was in the press booth. I was in a great seat for hockey.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. But the Eastwood speech, you know, there were times I loved it. I did. There were a couple what I would call cringeworthy, just because, well, you know, sometimes I can put on my establishment hat and I'm like, ooh. But but there was a great post on Ricochet that basically said that this speech was meant for the common man.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't for the media. It wasn't for the political professional. And here's the other thing. Everybody needs to read this speech, because the problem is, you know, the whole point was that he was a surprise guest. And remember, we had you were there. You saw every time somebody came out to walk through the podium and to do their sound check and stuff. That was caught on camera, right?
Oh, yeah.
We had
yeah.
these great images of Ann Romney going out and practicing her speech. And well, we don't have that image of Clint Eastwood, because he never went out to do a sound check. He never ran through his speech. He never practiced his speech. And then this is just like a basic technical element, mm-hmm. but he kept turning his head to talk to an empty chair, and the microphone wasn't picking up everything that he was saying.
I know. I kept on thinking to myself, okay, someone really needs to turn his mic up.
Right, exactly. And that was part of the problem. They didn't do a good mic check on it. So there was definitely a strangeness to it, I think, for some people. Mm-hmm. Also, it wasn't, I mean, he did an improvisational 15-minute one-man play.
Yeah.
That's not typical for a political convention. So people have to go back and read this thing because the content is devastating. Mm-hmm. And you're so right, Josh, it wasn't meant for Dan Rather and Katie Couric. It was meant for the average television viewer, and he made some unassailable points in that speech. And you know, listen, this is something that Andrew Breitbart taught all of us, and he got it from, believe it or not, Saul Alinsky. One of Alinsky's rules for radicals is that the very best way to attack your opponent is through ridicule.
Mm-hmm.
And conservatives and Republicans are ridiculed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare for a Democrat who, you know, Democrats are the most caring, the most empathetic, the smartest, the greatest speakers. You know, the Republicans and conservatives are mean and crotchety and selfish, and we're stupid and we're evil and we're terrible speakers, right? I mean, that's what's been told to us because that's what our culture and that's what our media has always tried to portray. Well, here we've got one of the greatest actors, directors of our time and writers of our time up there absolutely lacerating President Obama with ridicule. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very well done. And he also brought up some very good policy points. Frankly, some points that I was shocked I didn't hear from the podium up until Clint Eastwood. He brought up the fact that Barack Obama foolishly said that he would shut down Gitmo, and he did not get that done. But remember, that was the first thing that he signed when he got to the Oval Office?
Yep.
And he is the one who absolutely ripped apart this administration for the notion that they could try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in downtown Manhattan in a federal court rather than in a military tribunal. We didn't hear that from Rudy Giuliani. We didn't hear that from Condoleezza Rice. We didn't hear that from any on the main podium, but we heard it from Clint Eastwood. These are very important and devastating points that he made. And then, of course, finally, when he just looked at the audience and said, listen, folks, this is really important. I need you to hear this. This is not about Republican. It's not about Democrat. It's not about Libertarian. The point is we own this country, and these guys work for us. And if they don't get the job done every few years, you just got to let them go. That's devastatingly powerful, and it was plain-spoken. I really do. Forget about Katie Couric. Eventually, I think that this is going to resonate as an important moment.
Absolutely. And the fact that he was using strong language like that, that could – it was empowering. And that's the other thing that I gathered from – even from Rubio's speech and from Mitt Romney's speech is that they were empowering the people watching. That this was our country. This isn't a politician's country. This is we the people's country.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's something about when Paul Ryan says, we can do this. We can do this. It's not yes, we can. You know, whenever Barack Obama said yes, we can in 2008, it was all about yes, we can get me elected. Mm-hmm. You know?
Exactly.
I mean, once he got in, the optimism kind of went out of the way because it was all about, okay, we're here, and all the bad stuff is Bush's fault. And then that optimism went away, and I think that the American people are drawn to optimists. I don't think we're going to hear a lot of optimism from Charlotte this week. And Paul Ryan, there's something very infectious when he says, we can do this, because he doesn't sugarcoat it in, you know, suggesting that it's going to be fairy tales and pixie dust. He says we can do this in a way that projects to all of us is not going to be easy, and we got a lot of hard work to do, and we got to start working right away. But yes, we can do this. By the way, that whole can-do spirit of you know, we've got to get this job done, so let's just get to work. That was the overall theme that I walked away with. And the fact that the day after the convention, instead of the typical victory lap that many politicians do after their nomination process, the fact that Mitt Romney hopped on his plane, diverted it, and went straight to New Orleans to tour the storm-damaged areas with Bobby Jindal. Bobby Jindal, a fantastic Republican governor who also is getting the job done, rolling up his sleeves and getting to the work at hand. That projected exactly the image that Mitt Romney needs to project for the next 70 days.
Exactly. I thought when I heard that he was doing that, I thought that was one, probably the most brilliant move yet out of this campaign, and two, an absolutely devastating blow to the Obama campaign because they did not see that coming, because they don't expect Republicans to do that.
Yeah. It's true.
So,
it is true.
So, all right,
thank you.
Well, Larry, I know...
Orangeburg? What the hell is Orangeburg, South Carolina? That's the stupidest city I've ever heard.
Hey.
I'm sorry if there are any listeners in Orangeburg, but come on, Orangeburg?
Hey, let me know... Let me
know. Orangeburg, South Carolina.
Let me know when you get to Bat Cave, North Carolina. You thought the place
Bat Cave? Seriously? That's the city in North Carolina?
You thought the place was hidden? No. Bruce Wayne had to put a gigantic-ass sign out there so everyone could know where it is. No.
This is good to know. I will tweet a picture of that. By the way, if anyone wants to follow me on Twitter, it's Larry O'Connor with an O-R, Larry O'Connor on Twitter.
And where can they listen to you, Larry?
They can. Well, all next week I'll be at the Breitbart News Network there, Breitbart TV. We'll be doing live coverage starting around, what time am I going to start? Probably around 10 in the morning. I'd say 10 in the morning till about 2 in the afternoon Eastern time. We'll be doing live streaming from the Democratic National Convention. They're asking to get security for us. I think they think that we're going to get yelled at and attacked and stuff. And if they do, just, you know, we will have our cameras on. So that'll be good video as well.
Awesome. Larry, thanks for taking time out of your driving schedule there to talk with us.
Oh, it's our pleasure, seriously. And thank you for all the support. Thanks for what you're doing over at FTR. 12 Fingers Malloy, I said yo. And we'll get the job done this week in Charlotte. We're gonna shine a light. Oh, I want to mention one last thing real fast.
Yes.
I want people to notice this, and I really want people to start blogging about this and tweeting about this. The logo for the convention, you know, we just came from from Tampa, right?
Yeah.
And the logo, there's elephants everywhere, right? Because it's a Republican convention, and the elephant is the logo, right? And so we're seeing all these logos for the Charlotte convention, and it's all Obama. I swear to God, he has hijacked the party. There's no donkey. There's no, it barely even says Democratic National Convention. If you look at the logo for the convention, it is a take on the red, white, and blue O for Obama. This is the Obama convention, not the Democrat convention. It's
the ONC, not the DNC.
Yeah, exactly. Now, tell me this. Isn't there something highly symbolic that there's a statue being made of him out of sand?
Yeah, I know.
Highly
and apparently it's getting washed away already. Yeah, it is
awesome.
Very symbolic. They really should have thought that through.
Yeah. Well, Larry, thanks again for being on this week. Again, where can they find you on the internet?
Breitbart News, of course, over at Breitbart TV. They can find the show at Larry O'Connor. Larry O'Connor Show. What's it called? LarryO'ConnorShow.com. The Larry O'Connor Show. I don't know. They'll find that. And Twitter, Larry O'Connor.
Excellent.
Facebook, and I also have a pornography site, but it's under a different name. Probably don't want to mix it with this content. So,
thanks, Larry. I appreciate you holding that one back.
No problem. I have such a filter, don't I?
Yes, you do. All right, we've been talking with Larry O'Connor, and you are listening to Gillespie here on FTRRadio.com. We'll be right back after this.
College graduates should not have to live out their 20s in their childhood bedrooms, staring up at fading Obama posters and wondering when they can move out and get going with life.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTR Radio. We have one of our all-time favorites on this show. You know her. You love her. She's Dina Fraioli. Dina!
Woohoo!
How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And yourselves?
Oh, doing fine. How you doing, Smoozy?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to have Dina on. I love having Dina on.
Oh, that's nice. And it was just your birthday, so...
It was on Friday.
We're still celebrating Smoozy's birthday, actually. it's an extravaganza throughout the weekend.
Wee!
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I like birthday extravaganzas, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
The only way to do it.
A little portmanteau action on that word. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dina, the reason we have you on is because we just spoke with Larry O'Connor, editor-in-chief of the Breitbarts, and he kind of gave us his rundown of the GOP convention. We want to talk to you about basically kind of what the Democrat, what you see the Democrats doing this week. And as this show airs, the Democrats have started day one of their convention.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, so we're kind of ahead of the curve here because it's Monday night right now. But what do you see kind of going on this week? And do you see any reaction from the GOP convention?
Well, I mean, in terms of, you mean reaction on the Democrat side, like what they're going to talk about? I mean,
well, I think that, you know, basically we can see from what happened with the Clint Eastwood thing that he got their dander up a bit. And we can see that to touch on what the chairwoman of the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, basically, where was it here? I had it here. Okay. She says that the GOP has superficial diversity.
That's my reaction to it. Sorry.
Yes. And mind you, we're talking to a Republican. She is Jewish. So this show here, diverse right here.
No, not even that. I am Puerto Rican. I'm Jewish.
Right.
And I'm Italian. And I'm a New Yorker. I'm the fucking UN. She's got like.
She's a walking UN.
Yeah. I'm not even like. There's no WASP here. I am full on MINO, as I like to say.
That's right.
And my grandmother, she's always like, you know, you can't really say like, hey, Grandma, you're really African-American. She's like, I am not black. I'm like, have you seen our relatives? So my mom is, you got a lot of black in you. And I'm like, that's cool. Put more in there. Everything that I just said sounded racist, totally. It really did. But it's not meant to because I embrace my diverse heritage. I'm probably more diverse than Debs.
Ah, that's
probably
a safe thought.
Probably. But seriously, and this is something that the Q and I brought up with Larry is that the Republicans really put forth a good showing last week, and it wasn't superficial.
I don't think so.
Are our future leaders. This is a deep bench, and it is a very diverse bench.
I think also it could just be my Florida talking, but I kind of think, just in reading this, she's from Florida, you know, Rubio's from Florida. I think this is kind of a reaction to Rubio. Like, they are more terrified of Rubio than anything else. That scares the Democratic Party like crazy. They're terrified of Rubio. And Rubio didn't just give a wonderful speech. He gave a freaking fantastic speech.
Oh, it was spectacular.
Yeah, he was great. He's charismatic. He brings forth that American dream story that I don't know anyone in the Democratic Party who does that.
Mm-hmm.
He embodies so much of the spirit of what minorities have gone through to come to this country, and that terrifies them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely terrifies them, especially success.
I think, Dina, I think that's a really good point, and I will just interject here real quick. My entire family, God love them all, are still liberal Democrats, and I had family birthday dinner last night with them, and I, without my prompting, they kind of brought up their thoughts, and they watched a lot of the speeches, and they were all very positive about Rubio's speech.
Yeah, it's hard not to be. He's got great writers. He's got a great inner circle of people. And he can deliver it. It's really about that. Like, you know, at first I was kind of looking at some of the other speakers like Rand Paul, and I was like, you know what? Rand Paul actually gave a good speech. He actually did a really good job. I mean, I could talk about Rand Paul for a long time and what needs to be done there, but I've kind of changed my mind about him. And I think other people, once they separate him from Ron Paul, because he has a different legacy.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely not his dad.
Yeah. Mm-mm. He needs to keep articulating that and make sure that he's not, you know, he's not the, you know, the guy who's wandering in the desert. He's fucking Moses on the mountain. He needs to. And he can.
I love the analogy.
So, I don't understand why, you know, with Reagan, it was the whole Big Tent thing. Somehow we got, framed as being people who are completely exclusive old white men. This is the party of people who aren't cool and they're stuffy and. Mm-hmm. Rich, and there's gay people. There's two different factions of gay Republicans. You got the Log Cabin Republicans, you've got Go Proud. That's two separate organizations that are, you know, like, this isn't just, it's not like these are our token gay guys. It's like, these are two organizations that pride themselves, no pun intended.
Well played. Well played.
It's totally out of the ordinary, totally out of the blue. They're very proud of the fact that they're gay and Republicans, and they're proud that they're involved, and we accept them because they don't necessarily fall under the social conservative side of things. Mm-hmm. And we're cool with that. Most people are cool with that. I'm cool. I'm not, you know, my views are what they are. Your views are what they are. We're still allowed to come to the party and play. So I just think that, you know, getting back to the point, I think that a lot of this is just fucking fear, and it's sad. But it's also another part of the Debs machine that she's just breaking down and crazy. It just, everything's gotten worse and worse. Like, it's like the more she goes on TV, she doesn't get better and more articulate. She becomes even more of a bumbling idiot. And what's sad about this is Debbie Wasserman Schultz used to be such a different person. And I feel like, I mean, you have seen this with other senators, like Senator Gillibrand. She, when she was in the House, not pressured to be this liberal crazy person. She had her own little, you know, section of New York that was more socially conservative, fiscally liberal, and she was that. But you get pressure from people in leadership to be like them and be more progressive, or you're out. Mm-hmm. So it could be that she's just, you know, she has to have this progressive message, or bye, Debs. You know, we don't need you. She's going to keep winning anyway. It's not like she's leaving the House.
Sure. We're talking with consultant to the political stars, Dina Fraioli. Dina, kind of getting back to what do we see coming out of the Democrats' convention this week? I mean, we saw a lot of building up of America, a lot of basically taking back what we feel has been taken away by the government in the GOP convention. The Democrats, the president really doesn't have a lot to talk about. I mean, he can throw out some you know, fancy sayings, some numbers that are skewed, but he really doesn't have a really good record to run on here. So, I mean, for a guy who's having a sculpture made out of him, out of sand, which I mean, seriously, did they think about that sand?
Didn't it already wash away?
Yeah, I mean, it is starting to at the very least. I mean, you know. What are these people thinking? What do they have to sell to the American people this week?
I mean, there's a couple articles that I've seen. I saw a Politico piece, and I think it was in the Washington Post, where they talked about some of the delegates are not as hopeful about Obama because, I mean, this is not to say that they're not. I mean, okay, the Democrats aren't really giving a shit about policy.
Sure.
That's fine.
That's evident. Yeah.
Yeah. Take care of the man. We want Obama. Mm-hmm. But the tone is kind of something that we need to be, you know, Obama's not been hopeful. It's just been, you know, what is it, since April to August, Obama's basically spent $200 million beating the crap out of Mitt. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, all it's ever done was brought his unfavorables down 4 and his favorables have gone up 2. So that's like a 6-point skew. Mm-hmm. That's not a lot. That's $200 million. And, you know, he's going to have to. He doesn't have any more money. We're going to have to beat the shit out of Obama now, so we're in a good position for that. But getting back to what we can see from, you know, the Democrats and the delegates, I can't imagine anybody who wouldn't want Obama to, you know, they were sold on hope and change, and he's not said anything about what he's going to do in his second term. There's no hook other than Romney sucks, the other guy is bad. Bad, bad, bad. Republicans, evil, evil Republicans.
No, you bring up a good point. I'm sorry to cut you off, Susie.
Oh, no, I was just saying, and that he'll be more flexible as far as the Russians are concerned.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that we know. That's the only thing he's honestly, you know, and not even to the American public, but outlined. He has offered no vision for the future. I mean, I cannot look at any previous incumbent who has run for re-election and they have not offered some sort of plan of what they want to do with another term in office. And you're absolutely correct in that he has just hit Mitt Romney left and right since the beginning of the year because they knew that he was probably going to be the one the Republicans nominated. And but still, you know, Romney's out there. Granted, he took a little while to get to the meat of his policy in his speech. But frankly, I thought the point of his speech was right on. And when he finally did get to the policy points, he hit them briefly, but he hit them. He did what he needed to do. But Obama, up to this point, has offered us nothing.
Yeah, I feel that
it's shocking.
It is shocking. And, you know, there's a couple things going on here. you have, I've read from some of the delegates saying, like, you know, if you kind of go with that Democratic refrain of Republicans have done nothing but block Obama on jobs, bills, and, you know, these people still believe that he needs to offer up a plan on what he plans on doing to, you know, get legislation passed despite Republicans being in the House and having a majority. So he needs to, you know, project a more positive image, and he needs to, you know, give them, they bought into him. The D's are going to have to buy into a second term. So what are they going to get for their money? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this convention turns out to be something that's positive and hopeful. And at least he's not going to be able to get that magic that he had in 2008. There's just no way.
Yeah, the magic is gone. The luster has worn off.
It's definitely, definitely worn off. And, you know, a lot of the whole, are we better than we were 4 years ago? Obama's relying on them to shut up. Shut up and rally behind me. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. He is really trying to make people forget the last 4 years. Like, they didn't even happen. And that they could have been a lot better if only we didn't have 2 years of Republicans in control of one-third. One-third of the federal government.
How are they even able to sell that?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. I've seen several leftist talking points about the Republicans filibustering everything, and I keep thinking to myself, do you understand what filibuster actually means? Because apparently you don't.
It's like you watched an episode of The West Wing, and you believe the
right
happens. So that's a great episode of The West Wing, people. That is a great episode.
Oh yeah, we're not dissing The West Wing here. I mean, it was a fantastic show.
It's good TV.
All politicos love it, but it's just. It's mind-numbing that some people are actually buying this. But I get the impression, and maybe this is just the, and pardon the phrase, hopeful side of me. But and maybe this is the luster of being at the convention, the GOP convention all last week. But I get the impression that people are no longer being having the wool pulled over their eyes by Barack Obama, that Mitt Romney is in many ways, in spite of his campaign, but also because of his campaign, starting to realize that Mitt can be a solid leader, that this stuff that they're throwing at him, you know, the Bain stuff, trying to hang around his neck, the whole deal with his dog on the roof of his car. I mean, while dumb.
And Don Seamus.
yeah, the dog Seamus. While dumb, I mean, really. That was a long time ago. I mean, the things that they're throwing at him are just utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, and it goes back to the point, which is that from April to now, he's had to spend $200 million on attacks like that. Attacks on saying he killed someone and, you know, the whole cancer thing or whatever. I just dropped a pen. That's important. I needed to say that out loud.
We're authentic here on this show, Dina.
We are.
Yes, we are. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that, like, it totally goes back to that point that spending $200 million that he does not have, and we are written. You know, if you want to talk about what Mitt should be doing, he should lock himself up in a goddamn room and do debate prep from now until, you know, the debates, mm-hmm. basically. He should be in there with Portman. Portman should have him in there interrogation style, fucking Gitmo. He should be handcuffed to a chair. You're listening to me. This is Debate Prep 101.
Anyway, Dina.
I'm Dina.
Where can the wonderful people on the internet find you?
You know what's frustrating about this part is that nobody knows how to spell Fraioli.
So well, this is your opportunity to spell Fraioli.
Fraioli. Dina, Dina, at Dina Fraioli.
Awesome.
It's Dina not Fraioli. That hard. Just think about it.
Think about ravioli without the V and add an F.
All of a sudden, I'm thinking of Samir from Office Space. It's not that hard to say. Na-i-ne-na-ja. Samir Naga. Just give it to me. Anyway.
Add in the silent PH and you're fine.
That's right. All right. Well, Dina, thanks for being on this week.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You are listening to Gillespie. We will be right back after these messages. Stick around.
My dad used to tell us, en este país, ustedes van a poder lograr todas las cosas que nosotros no pudimos. In this country, you're going to be able to accomplish all the things we never could. A few years ago, during a speech, I noticed a bartender behind a portable bar in the back of the ballroom. And I remembered my father, who worked for many years as a banquet bartender. He was grateful for the work he had, but that's not the life he wanted for us. You see, he stood behind a bar in the back of the room all those years, so one day I could stand behind a podium in the front of a room.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Guys, we had a great night tonight. It was a loaded show with Larry O'Connor from Breitbart and the wonderful Miss Dina Fraioli, the consultant to the conservative stars. Smoozy, did you have a good time tonight?
I had a wonderful time.
What was your highlight? What would you say was the highlight for you?
Oh, gosh, it's so hard to isolate just one moment. I mean, you know, great stuff from Larry and what he recalls from the RNC and Dina. How can you not love everything Dina has to say?
Gotta love the Miss Dina Fraioli. So on that note, we've come to the end of the show. Smoozy, where can they find you on the interwebs?
They can find me on Twitter at SmoozyQ and on my blog at qwithaview.wordpress.com.
And you can find me at Josh Gillespie on the Twitters, as well as joshgillespie.com, where you can find all previous podcasts. So for the Smoozy Q, this is Josh Gillespie. You've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Stay tuned for the Snark Factor at Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor Players. Thanks. We'll see you again next week.
Don't speak like you used to. And where do we go to now that our comfort is gone?
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?